Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios. Over the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We will be joined by Mia O'Brien from down in Jacksonville a little bit later this hour at 8:30. We'll get her thoughts on Jacksonville and where things stand with them heading into the season as we continue our tour through the AFC South this week. Real quickly, if you're tuning in and you're wondering where Paul Kuharski is right now, we're on a bit of a summer break with Kuharski, so looking forward to having him back towards the beginning of football season, but summertime break for Kuharski at the moment. So a couple people asking on the text line what's going on there, and that's where we're at on that front. So we'll get to PK a little bit later as football season approaches. Coming up, Mia O'Brien joining us later in the program at 8:30. Joe, Florida gets it done last night. They win the Stanley Cup Final for the second year in a row, back-to-back cups for Florida. You watch the game, and it became apparent very early on that they just kind of felt like they were on a mission last night. They scored the first goal, and then they made it 2-0, and they've just been so good in the first period in the series and have dominated the Oilers in the first period. And the Oilers, to their credit, a couple of times in this series, Joe, were able to come back and tie the game back up and win against Florida, which is a really, really difficult thing to do. But that's not really a long-term formula for success. If you find yourself down against Florida every game, most of the time you're not coming back. That was the case again last night. And Joe, frankly, like to me, it became pretty apparent about halfway through the second period that Florida was just clamping it down and Edmonton was not coming back in that game last night. And here we are again with the Florida Panthers winning another championship, which means the state of Florida, Joe, has won 4 out of the last 6 championships, and they've had a representative in the final in either Tampa Bay or Florida every year since 2020. Pretty incredible.
Yeah, in retrospect, there's a little bit of a mismatch here. And you know, look, you look at these teams, what's the difference? You know, the same two teams play well. There's a guy in the third line who was not there last year for Florida who had a little bit of a little bit of an impact this year for that team. So, you know, they just flat out the best team, and the D word – of course, gets floated out there, and there's an opportunity for that to be reality here moving forward. I guess they do have some tough choices. Can't probably, you know, Alex Doherty mentioned earlier Ekblad, you know, as a – I think most people think Sam Bennett is absolutely – like he's going to be back, right? Is Ekblad a guy they may have to say goodbye to?
Maybe. Like I don't think they're going to be willing to pay a lot of money for him. I'll put it that way. Like I don't think he's going to sign a huge deal there. So, to me, if Ekblad wants to come back to Florida, it's probably going to have to be on a significantly cheaper deal than he could get on the open market, would be my guess.
Yeah, and so some guys, that's the choice. It's like, you know, I love the situation here. I know I would be like, you know, South Florida and they're during the winter time. Not that doesn't sound terrible, but you can go get overpaid somewhere, you know? And so you kind of got to get it while you can get it in this league too. So, but, just impressive, man. Just a hell of a team. And, now you look with Connor McDavid and, you said it before, right? Like, is Connor McDavid, if they don't win the cup this year, does he really think about going somewhere else and hold off on the massive extension that they want to sign him to finish his career out?
It's a great question. Like, again, this is the way that I would view it if I was McDavid, and I have no idea. Like, this could end up being a non-story. Like, he may sign an extension on July 1st with Edmonton, and it's just over at that point. That could be the way this goes. I would do – if I'm McDavid, I'm not signing anything. I'm seeing how next season plays out in Edmonton, And then I'm making a decision after that. And is that a good situation for the Oilers to be in? No, it's not. But McDavid, I think needs to have every option at his disposal on the table. And look, maybe he gets through all of next year and free agency comes up and he decides that Edmonton's the place that he wants to be. And that's the situation that makes most sense for him in terms of winning a championship. And you could just re-sign at that point. Like, I doubt very seriously that even if he doesn't sign an extension this offseason, that Edmonton's going to get to February next year and they're just going to be like, all right, we got to trade Connor McDavid. Like, I doubt that's going to happen. So if I was McDavid, I would not sign an extension this offseason. I would see what the Oilers do, particularly in goal. I would head into next year with an open mind and then make your decision after that. I have no idea if that's the way he's going to do it or not. I also know this, if that's the way he chooses to operate, it's going to be a massive talking point and a distraction all year. But frankly, like, if I were him, I would be willing to deal with that because the next 8 years of my career are more important than just the temporary distraction of what that would lead to next year, in my mind. I don't know if he views it the same way. I think we have a frozen Joe Rexroad in so far.
It looks like it.
He is frozen up here on the program. Well, we'll take your thoughts on that. 615-737-1025, our phone number. Florida wins another Stanley Cup. We'll get back into our Predators conversation. And is there a possible way that they can build and get back to being a competitive team on that front coming up next year as well? Robbie and Rexroad, 1025-1063, the game. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan tonight as the Nashville Sounds take on Iowa. Pregame beginning at 6:20, first pitch at 6:35. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Sounds baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexroad, 1025-1063 The Game. We'll have Mia O'Brien with us coming up here in about 13 minutes. We'll get into the Jacksonville Jaguars with her as we continue our tour through the AFC South this week. Taking your thoughts on the Cup final last night, 615-737-1025, and the Preds with an important offseason. If you missed our conversation with Alex Doherty earlier in the show, go check it out, Robbie and Rexroad, wherever you get your podcast. Brian wondering if the postseason injury reports have come out yet. Heard Matthew Tkachuk was playing through some pretty gnarly injuries. I haven't seen all of it yet. Joe, I'm interested to see what exactly Ekholm was dealing with, because I think he pretty clearly wasn't 100%, and he was dealing with an injury throughout the entire playoffs and then came back basically at the end of the Western Conference final. So he had a rough Cup final at times, particularly the last two games there, Ekholm, with some pretty bad decisions, pretty bad mistakes. And, you know, was that the complete difference in the series? No, Florida was the better team, but Ekholm did not go well for him in the last couple of games, which was tough to see.
Yeah, it's too bad. It would have been really cool to see Ekholm and Arvidsson be able to get a cup, even if it would have meant that Corey Perry also would have gotten to celebrate. So again, that's my solace today. I wanted to see the Oilers win it. I thought it would have been great for, obviously, for Edmonton, but I think great for the league to have a Canadian team win it, to have McDavid win it. But it also would have meant Corey Perry happy, and so I'm going to go ahead and take solace in the fact that he's miserable today.
Man, you talk about a run that he's on. I mean, I guess in one way, you're making it to the final all the time, so that's got to be fun. But he has now participated in 5 out of the last 6 Stanley Cup finals and has lost all of them. He's lost all 5 of them. Now, I guess, like, he can always go back to – he has won a Stanley Cup very early in his career, so at least he's got one. But the 5 in a row of losing in the final is brutal.
If you're a contender in this league, you do not want Corey Perry on your team. Do not do it. If you're a terrible team who would be happy to even win a playoff round
– get him.
Or even get in the playoffs, yeah, jump all over it. But if you're like a team who thinks you're close – he's not the final piece. He's the piece that guarantees you lose in the final round.
It's pretty.
That's the only thing I can conclude. It's math. It's science.
It's pretty unbelievable at this point. Let's head to our 1025 The Game phone line. driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcoming Daryl to the program. Daryl, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Hey, thanks, guys. Enjoy the show. How you guys doing this morning?
Good, Daryl.
Good.
I am a Florida, I'm a Florida fan. I'm a Florida Panther fan, so I'm high as a kite this morning. And the all I heard was all I've heard from media, Canadian media, and the NHL Network was Connor McDavid this, Connor McDavid that. But we cut him down 2 years in a row. We've changed his name from Connor McDavid to Connor McCuppus. But anyway, gotta give my Florida Panthers credit. Bill Zito's built a heck of a program down there, and I used to live down there and go to games, and I'd love to see the born in Nashville, so I'd love to see the Predators get competitive like that. Maybe they will, and I guess we just gotta have patience with them. But anyway, go Florida Panthers, go Predators, and I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Thanks for calling, Daryl. Appreciate it. In Florida, I mean, what they've done is it's unbelievable. First off, getting to 3 Cup finals in a row is so unbelievably difficult. Winning back-to-back championships is unbelievably difficult. In this league especially, and now they've done it, and they're a team that doesn't look like they're going anywhere. Like, I would be stunned if Sam Bennett doesn't end up back there. You know, they do have some decisions to make. We'll see what happens with Brad Marchand and what happens with Aaron Ekblad, and it's not going to be the exact same team next year, but the core of it is in place, and the core of it is going to be around for a while. Now, you know, Bobrovsky's not getting any younger, so what's that going to look like as they move forward? We'll see, but he still, in the big moments, plays really well. And yeah, you know, that last part of Daryl's call there, Joe, of the Predators, is kind of what we've been honing in on the last couple of days. And how close are they? And how realistic is it that they can get close to being competitive anytime soon? Like, I think if you wanted right now to do a direct comparison with the standard in the NHL, which is the Florida Panthers, like, if you wanted to do a direct comparison with them and the Predators and where they are, the conclusion that you would draw is they are light years away from each other, and it's hard to argue that. So is there a path that Barry Trotz can take this offseason that gets them anywhere close to being a team that's actually a threat to win? It's hard to think about right now.
Yeah, you know, we've Alex Doherty broke down, like, some significant things he has to try. Like you said, Robbie, you know, the offer sheets maybe a little bit more, you know, prevalent now. You like where the cap's going. The Preds do; they have some flexibility to go chase someone. But I do feel like a major trade needs to happen. I don't know what it is, but something that shakes things up significantly. Something, you know, it's not a comparable situation. Obviously, 9 years ago, the hockey world was stunned. It's a Shea Weber for PK Subban trade. I'm still stunned that there are Preds fans who think that was bad for the Preds. I mean, you can love Shea Weber more, but you have to acknowledge, like, what Subban did in that window with the Preds, right? Yep. I mean, it would turn out to be a tremendous move. You know, that's a defenseman for defenseman. I don't know what it is. I don't, but I feel like that has to be part of this offseason, or the attempt at least to do something big. And even if it looks like it's just, like, you know, like trading comparable value for comparable value, just to change the chemistry, change because obviously this just didn't work last year. And I think, you know, Alex is right when he said, like, if you didn't do anything major, but then you had a lot of things break your way, which is a lot of what it is. It's no matter what happens, hope is a huge part of next year for the Preds. That's a huge part of the strategy. Hope. This guy looks more like we thought he was going to look last year. But even if a lot of that works out for you and you don't do something major, you're probably a fringe playoff team at best.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, this naturally at some point leads back to a coaching conversation. And I'm open to that. I'm open to, you know, if the Predators could find a better coach or what they deem to be a better coach, and if it doesn't start well next year and they have to make a move with Andrew Brunette, how much of a bump do they get from that? I mean, we can go through examples in the NHL where you get a pretty immediate bump when you fire your coach. But I still, like, to me, it's more complicated than just the coach. You know, is Andrew Brunette the right coach for this team? You know, it's hard to make that argument right now based on the way that things just went. It's up to him to prove that he is after an offseason of kind of tinkering with some things and and seeing what adjustments he makes. But, like, to me, even coaching stuff aside, there have to be some changes heading into this year. Like, you can't come back with the same team and just think that you're magically going to figure it out next year. Problem is, I think with the contracts that they have and the years that everybody just had with this group, they're in a really difficult spot to make significant changes. Like, I hear what Alex is saying about making a big move. Where's the path to doing that? Like, who are you trading that can generate a big move at that point? I don't think it's Marchessault. Forsberg has a no movement clause. That would probably be the guy, but do you want to do that? I mean, that seems like a really tough sell to me. So I just don't know where the ammunition for the big move is coming from, unless you're just talking about being willing to move on from some assets.
Soros for McDavid.
Yeah. Hey, if you can pull that off, I'd make that trade.
How about, okay, let's see. How would you get McDavid and Drysdale together? What else would you have to throw in there? The entire city of Nashville?
Yeah, probably the entire net worth. Yeah, probably.
Will they take Kid Rock? Will you guys take Kid Rock, please?
Maybe so. It could be part of the deal. Does Jelly Roll get traded?
Ooh, I see. Now that, I don't know about that one. I'll gladly give up Kid Rock. I'll actually give up Kid Rock for like a Corey Perry jersey. But yeah, I don't think we can give up Jelly Roll, man.
Hey, Jelly Roll was talking with McKinnon the other day. NHL.com posted about it. I was like, look at Jelly Roll doing some recruiting for the Predators when McKinnon's contract expires in like 7 years.
Could Where was stuff. McKinnon?
I think Jelly Roll was just at a concert in Denver.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, he's everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, I mean, like, seriously, like, there's just – it's something where I'm just waiting for it this offseason. I expect one day to be like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
And, like, I didn't think of that one.
Right.
But I don't know if that's going to – I do think that Barry Trotz has to be exploring all these things, right?
You would absolutely think so. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll be joined by Mia O'Brien coming up next. Get her thoughts on the Jacksonville Jaguars as we continue our tour through the AFC South. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Wednesday morning, and we are continuing our tour through the AFC South. Today, it's the Jacksonville Jaguars, and to help us talk more about them, we head to our 1025 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Mia O'Brien, who covers the Jacksonville Jaguars for 1010 XL 92.5 FM down in Jacksonville. Mia, good morning. How are you?
How we doing, gentlemen? Just cruising along I-95 to RHQ. Hope you guys are doing well on this fine Wednesday morning.
Doing really well. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Mia, I want to start on the Travis Hunter front because obviously draft night, that was the buzz and that was the story of the league, of the Jags making the big move to trade up and go get Hunter. What have been your impressions of Travis Hunter, the player he could be for this franchise, and kind of the buzz around the city now that he's a member of the Jacksonville Jaguars?
Yeah, I mean, certainly, as Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network noted earlier this week on the Insiders, he thinks that they've talked about the Jaguars 10 times more than they ever have before since they went up to number 2 to select Travis Hunter. Ultimately, for me, I think that what General Manager James Gladstone has echoed, this idea of Travis Hunter will elevate the Jaguars by being nothing more than himself. Well, certainly many people want to evaluate the coach speak index of the GM. Ultimately, I think he's dead on, and I think it's proved fruitful through 2-3 months so far of his stay in Jacksonville. Travis being Travis is enough to elevate not only the profile of this team nationally, but also the play on the field. One thing that I've really noted during OTAs has been just not only the dancing and the videos that you'll see, but after every single play, whether it's offense or defense, it sounds little and minute, but Travis Hunter is running over and high-fiving dudes. Like, Trevor Lawrence in years past would complete a pass, and maybe he, like, claps and says, good job. Travis Hunter is running over, even if he's not the one on the receiving end of that play, and he's dapping somebody up and saying, hey, nice play. Not making a big deal out of it, a simple, hey, high five. That, though, for me, speaks volumes in terms of this is a guy who is invested in the entire operation, not just who he is as a player. And I think that that is such a massive development. Not that the Jaguars have had players who are focused on themselves and no one else. If anything, I think the argument has been we have too many Eagle Scouts here, too many Boy Scouts. But you can just see by Travis being Travis, I think that that's creating a sense of competition and a sense of urgency and certainly a sense of camaraderie on this roster.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Travis Hunter in every way, Mia. But I also, like, I just, all through the draft process, I'm like, I just really hope he plays defense primarily because I think he can be an all-time great cornerback in the NFL. Not that he can't be a difference maker at receiver, but what are you seeing or what did you see just in terms of on either side of the ball? Because, I certainly saw clips, you know, from practice where he's making plays on both sides. But, like, how do you feel about his skill set and whether either side might be better for him if he does have to make a choice?
Yeah, I think cornerback is the more natural position, and that's why the Jaguars have started him on the offensive side of the ball. The route running is what everyone wants to critique. Ultimately, he's a guy who plays with such feel for the game that he probably has gotten by up to this point just based off of his electric playmaking ability. And ultimately, yes, maybe his route running isn't as refined as the team would like it to be, as it needs to be at the National Football League level. And so that's why he has started out on offense, because that's the area of his game that has to grow. But especially after Gladstone's comments on SiriusXM yesterday, look, they are going to play him on both sides of the ball. Do I think he starts opposite Tyson Campbell at outside corner week one? I don't. There are some people, some of my colleagues at 1010XL who do. I think that for me, I think it's by year two, year three, you see that, because I do believe in what I saw at Colorado, what I saw at Jackson State, what we saw, you know, a couple hours up the road when he was in high school as well in Southeast Georgia. I do believe he will at some point in time be starting on both sides. Right now, the Jaguars have started on offense just because that's the area of his game that needs the most growth, because he probably has spent the most time in the lab, so to speak, at defensive back.
Mia, what have your impressions been of Liam Cohen to this point? And as you look at kind of the fit that he is with the offensive side of the ball and what that could mean for Trevor Lawrence, how do you kind of view those two together and what Trevor Lawrence now has to work with Liam Cohen coming in?
Yeah, even just beyond the Trevor relationship, which I think speaks to the larger relationship that Liam has with all his players, the biggest thing that was lacking in the twilight of Doug Peterson's tenure here in Jacksonville was this idea of the why. And I feel like our listeners are sick and tired of me promoting my buddy Mike Silver of The Athletic, but his book, The Why, is everything that discusses the origin story of Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay, which in turn discusses the origin story of Liam Cohen, who, as he likes to say, got his PhD with the Los Angeles Rams, learning under Sean McVay as an assistant coach and later as his offense coordinator. I think that the why is everything, and the why was lacking. I've heard it from multiple people in the building, whether it be staffers or players, this idea of going into the head coach's office, and whether or not, and to not put it all on Doug Peterson, by the way, too, because the same could be said for the coordinators, the same could be said for the former general manager. This idea of going in and having a conversation and saying, why are we doing this? You gave me this play in the playbook, but why is this the play that's being run ahead of this play? And not just the lack of an explanation, because I think that there could have been a conversation, but the pushback to why do we have to have this conversation is a bit old school in my book, and it's not what this new age, the Google generation, as I like to call it, player needs. This is and I could speak to it because I'm in the same age bracket. This is a generation that has grown up going down rabbit holes, Googling anything that they have a question about. And so just by giving someone a playbook and saying, hey, well, this is the way we're going to do it, that's not enough. Liam Cohen and this staff are not only available, I've heard it from multiple players, that they could pop in at any time to the head coach's office and ask him anything at all. And again, that's not to say Doug Peterson wasn't accessible, but I think this back and forth organic conversation and wanting to get into a deeper nuanced understanding of the game of football is not something that a previous generation and an older head coach was doing with Trevor Lawrence, was doing with any player on this roster for the last several years. And this team's been energized. I've heard from a couple players that, you know, like they'll hear from Grant Udinski, the offense coordinator, if he misses their phone call. He's 29 years old. He's calling them back at 11 o'clock at night just because he wants them to know, hey, I care. Hey, I'm here to answer your question. And that speaks volumes to this group who felt like at times maybe their voice wasn't being heard in that final year or two under Doug Peterson.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Collaboration is sort of a dirty word in Nashville, given, you know, previous regimes. But I think that is absolutely, you know, it's one of the things about today's game that has changed, and people need to be mindful of that. So, Mia, also Liam Cohen, you know, the big thing for him last year was the Bucs run game. And, you know, he's considered one of the most creative guys in that way. Obviously, it hasn't gone well for the Jags. Do you see significant changes? Do you see a pathway for the Jags to have a much better run game and to give Trevor Lawrence maybe more play-action success this year?
There's certainly going to be an emphasis on it. And I think that part of the disconnect, and I think the statute of limitations has run up, so I feel okay saying this, part of the disconnect, part of the lack of a run game in Jacksonville over the last few years was because of the disconnect between the offense coordinator and certain position coaches on the previous staff. I don't see any of that right now because Liam Cohen has the controller and he's in charge of the entire offensive operation. And I think that that's massive. That's not to say that his assistant coaches, to your point, aren't collaborating with him, but because the run game is a focal point for him in designing this offense, it's a focal point for everyone. There is not this notion of, well, the offense coordinator wants to throw the ball, but the run game coordinator and the offensive line coach don't. Like, there's none of that. And I think that because philosophically, Liam played the position of quarterback at UMass and learning at the foot of his father, who was a longtime college and high school coach up in Rhode Island, I think he saw firsthand that having a strong run game made his life easier, and so he's intent on doing the same for Trevor Lawrence. Tony Boselli has said it, the executive vice president of the Jaguars, and of course their lone Hall of Famer. As soon as Liam started talking effusively about the run game being his focus and building through the trenches, look, like, I think Tony at first, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, I think at first he probably was like, oh, okay, good buzzwords, good job, you know how to, you know, play to your audience. But as he heard Liam talk more and more, it became very clear that this wasn't just lip service. This wasn't just passing the test. This is actually what he believes leads to a better passing attack in the National Football League.
Well, Mia, really good stuff. Really appreciate so much you taking time to be with us this morning. Really interested to see how it goes for Liam Cohen in year one this year, and we will talk to you soon.
Absolutely, boys. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Mia O'Brien, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Row, Jacksonville. Going to be really interesting to monitor in this division this year. Travis Hunter, what's going to happen on both sides of the football with him? We'll react a little bit to what Mia had to say. Coming up next, got some rapid-fire thoughts to get to on the text line as well. We'll do all that. Robbie and Rex Row, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Brought to you by First Horizon, big bank muscle, small bank hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Appreciate Mia O'Brien for being with us in the last segment. Joe, I mean, the more conversation that comes out of Jacksonville, the more I believe that, at least to start, they're going to give him a long look on both sides of the ball, and we'll see how it goes from there. But, you know. Maybe he's about to do something at the NFL level that we've just never really seen before on any sort of consistent basis.
Yeah, look, I think he's talented enough to do it. I just think that they're eventually going to get to the point where it's like, yeah, like this guy has to be at corner. Like we're just so much better on defense when he is at corner on every snap. I think they're going to come to that conclusion at some point. And then it'll just be interesting to see how many snaps do they feel like he has to have on offense. I mean, look, you know, they got Dyami Brown from Washington to go with Brian Thomas Jr., who's terrific. I mean, if Hunter is like I mean, if he can pull it off, I mean, I have no doubt he can make plays on offense. I have no doubt that he can help a team as a receiver. I just, like, I'm not sacrificing. If I'm an NFL head coach, I'm just not sacrificing the what I believe is like elite, you know, takeaway. I mean, I think he's like one of those guys who's just going to be feared by people as a corner, but we'll see. You know, I may be wrong. And then, of course, I just, as I've said before with the whole thing with Hunter, is like, if he does at some point get hurt, any guy, you know, in the NBA, everybody complains about load management, and they, for some reason, like, they want to blame LeBron for it. It's all the people in those front offices, the analytics people, who are looking at deep playoff runs and how 82 games can affect that negatively. If he gets hurt, I promise you there are going to be people in that front office saying, man, you expose this guy for 90 snaps or whatever a game, and this is going to happen. Like, you're not going to be able to avoid injury. That's where I think it ends. But I'm fascinated to see it.
Joey,
Travis
Vettic.
Hunter is who we've been hunting up.
Oh, man. I can't wait to hear him talk more as we get closer to the season. Joey,
oh, Travis.
We've had a couple of people ask about this today, so I'll bring it up. The chances that the Predators explore a trade with UC Saros to the Edmonton Oilers after what we've seen from Stuart Skinner.
Yeah, I mean, I just, you know, someone texted like the Oilers or the Canes would be willing to. I have a hard time buying that anybody out there after last season is signing up for 8 years right now.
Same.
So to me, the return, if you're actually thinking about this, if you're the Preds, and I have no idea if they are, I know if you ask them on the record, they'd probably spit their coffee out, right? Like, what are you talking about? But if they are considering this, then they have to understand that, like, the return will be horrifically low, I think.
You imagine?
I don't even know if you could pull it off.
You imagine the conversation we were having last year? I mean, this time last year, we were all screaming about Saros versus Askarov.
Right.
Could you imagine, like, a year later, them trading, having already traded Askarov and then making a move this offseason to trade Saros? It's like, well, who's playing goalie? Who's the goalie for the Predators?
Screw goalies.
Ananen? I don't
know. Goalies don't matter.
Yeah. I mean, first off, I would give it a very extremely, unbelievably low percent chance of happening. So, let me start there. And then, you know, the Predators have committed to him. Now, technically, his no trade clause doesn't kick in until July 1st. So, I mean, you could do it right now, I guess. But I don't know that I would hold my breath on that one. And to your point, would Edmonton or anybody else be willing to take on the entirety of that contract based on the numbers that Saros has had over the last couple of years? Maybe they would. I don't know. Maybe they look at it and they say, he's not getting paid that much money and the cap's going up. And, like, specifically with Edmonton, maybe they say, well, we feel like he's a massive upgrade over Stuart Skinner. Maybe you could do it. But I would just put the percentage chance of all those things coming together at about 0.4%, Joe. That's where I'll put it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just you know, look, if you're a team in a window and that's where you need an upgrade, I mean, you know, you could still duck and tuck yourself into it. Again, that's what the Preds thought they were, clearly, because they signed him. At his age, you sign that deal, that means, yep, here we're good now. We are good right now. Let's go. But man, you know, this is where I'd love to the data. And we've talked about this. There's underlying data, which, you know, like, Vingan is the master of. He knows everything that, and you guys all do, you know, cover the NHL.
Vingan's way better at that stuff than I am. Let me throw.
He's got it he's at the snap of a finger, right? But, you know, goals saved above expected, all that stuff. I'd love to see, like, because there's deeper data. There's better data, I think, that teams have that's proprietary. I'd love to know the actual full-on analysis of Saros' season last year, you know, from that perspective. I mean, we know, again, publicly, it's like, oh, we got to play better in front of them. The goalie's never the problem. Goalie's great. Goalie's awesome. That's hockey, you know. But how much concern is there actually in that building from Barry Trotz on down about Saros moving forward?
It's a great question. And, you know, I think this is a conversation, Joe, where a few different things can be true. If you're playing on a better team, does that affect your performance? Yes, it does. If they fix the defense around him, will he be better than he was this past year? Yes, he will. Independent of all of that, I still think there's plenty of room for concern on him individually, the way it's gone the last couple of years, the stretches of play where he's not been anywhere close to the level that they need him to be, and also wondering with all of that in the background whether or not that's going to improve as he continues to age here. So I think, you know, some people just limit the conversation to, well, if you just fix the defense, he'll be a lot better. And I'm sure he will be better if you fix the defense. I think there's a multi-layered part of this conversation that is very complex when it comes to the UC Saros stuff.
Yeah, look, when we were first guessing this a year ago, and by the way, like, had Askarov been amazing this year, it'd be way more intense of a conversation, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if he's going to end up being good. But the information we had last year, we argued with Will all the time. Will is like, he's not ready, immature, all this stuff. Like, yeah, okay, but like, if he's going to be that dude, then live with some of that and prosper over several years of like paying him not that much, you know, whatever. But the first guessing, a lot of it had to do with, again, Saros, his size, and the fact that explosive athleticism has to be at its top level for him to be great. And so then you figure that he probably ages out of being great earlier than some of these goalies. And I hope that's not what we're seeing, but it might be what we're seeing.
We're going to find out. I mean, there's a lot that goes into it with the Predators. As we've laid out today, there's a lot of work to be done if they're going to get back to a place where they're not only challenging for playoff spots, but being an actual threat to do something when they get there, which, again, is what Barry Trotz said when he signed all these guys last year. So how far away are they from doing that? It seems pretty far, but we'll see what happens on that front. That's going to do it for us today here on the program. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. Hope everybody has a wonderful rest of their day. Chasing Big Joe is coming up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3 The Game.